Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, founder and CEO at RiderFlex. We hope you enjoy today's podcast. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the RiderFlex show for updates on new episodes. And by the way, if you haven't already, check out the book we recently launched, The RiderFlex Guide, Inspiring and Hiring, available for purchase on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Try the number one marketing platform for small business. Everything you need from design to marketing to CRM. Learn more at marketing360.com. Marketing 360. Fuel your brand.
Barak Zitron on the RiderFlex podcast for the second time. How you doing, Barak?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You're in Denver, you said, today?
I'm in Denver, yeah. Can you see the skyline out there?
Ooh, nice apartment, man, or nice condo or whatever it is.
Thank you.
Very nice. I like it. Oh, I like it. Now, see, you're an outdoor guy. I thought you'd be like in a cabin or something, like up in the hills a little bit.
The service isn't good enough. One day, when I've got Starlink on my off-grid cabin, that's where I'll be.
Just so you know, so I've had Starlink for a while now. I use it when I take my Jeep up into the mountains. And we use it for our travel trailer as well when we go camping. And we got the RV version that they pitch, you know.
It's
a little smaller. Yeah, it's a little smaller, but works great. I really have no complaints. It's not super great for video conferencing if you're near trees.
Oddly specific, it sounds like you're as a video podcaster, it sounds like you know a thing or two.
Yeah. As a video podcaster. So every time, you know, when we did take it up to the mountains, I'm always like, you know, I'm checking out the spot. I'm like, okay, let me, you know, I'm trying to be in the right location. But it's got like, I bought a 150-foot cable from the router to the dish, right? So even if I got my Jeep pulled back into some trees, I can walk the thing, you know, like 150 feet over and do whatever. So yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan so far.
Like the modern day hanger and like smacking the television.
yeah, man, I remember those days. I'm old enough to remember that. I used to have to move the rabbit ears for my dad, believe it or not, and change the channel. I know you're much younger. You're my son's ages, I think. How old are you again?
27.
27. Okay. I got a 28-year-old and a 30-year-old. So close. I want to catch up about Model Outdoors and, you know, get a full update. And for the listeners, by the way, it's MODL Outdoors and it's modeloutdoors.com. For the people that know you, they know that already, but just in case they don't, I want to make sure we get that in there. It's tools for adventure, flexible, buildable and customizable. I don't know if those were the exact words on your website last time we talked, because it's been a year or two, but I like it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it definitely has changed. We've gotten a little bit, our product lines have expanded. And so earlier on, it was a little bit more niche, a multi-tool for water. And now we're focused on building flexible multi-tools, of which Model is a part of that.
Okay. And I have a bunch of ideas for you because I made a list, but we'll get into that in a little bit.
Excellent. Cool.
Tell the listeners about you. I want to learn more about you personally this time. Give me some mom, dad, siblings, where you grew up stuff. Give us some history if you don't mind.
Yeah. Grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm the oldest of three siblings, two younger sisters, both of whom live out here now. One actually just graduated from CU Boulder. The other is over in Rhino in Denver. Okay. So we're all out here. Parents are still back in Atlanta. Dad is an estate planning attorney, and mom focused on raising three awesome kids. And I learned a lot from them over the years, and still do. I feel like every time I go home, it's kind of it's almost a different relationship you have with your parents when you when you get to this age. Especially when you also don't see them every day, kind of feels like more has changed every time you do see them. And it feels a little bit more peer-to-peer as opposed to, you know, generation child looking up. So,
Yeah, no, yeah, no doubt about it. Does your dad have his own practice? Did he work for a big firm? Or
yeah, he's got his own practice. Yeah.
Is that where some of the entrepreneurial bug came from for you, you think, watching him do his own thing, or no?
I think part of it, I think he was pretty instrumental in helping show me that entrepreneurship is a path just in the first place. Okay. A lot of parents don't kind of advertise that as something, but my dad, he works with really unique estate planning cases, usually high net worth individuals. And so he works with a lot of people who, I mean, you really can't work an hourly job, you know, building the type of wealth that they've built. So his big thing for me was always leverage. You know, you want to be able to press a button and then a cascade of things happens, as opposed to being the person carrying out those things. And so you can leverage yourself, you can scale, and then you're not selling time. And so,
I like that.
Yeah. As paradoxical as it is, you know, as a lawyer, you like, you know, at the end of the day, you're still selling time. And he was pretty adamant that he's like, don't do that. That combined with his entrepreneurial, you know, he does it in house. I think that laid a lot of foundations.
Did he want you to be a lawyer, or that didn't matter? Because when you went to Georgia, you majored in business and finance. Was there pressure to go to law school, or no?
One time my grandparents called me up when I was getting to the end of college, and they were said, you know, you should really think about going to law school. And I was just never there. My dad's been pretty, you know, he loves what he does, but he was also very clear, like, don't be selling your time. And
okay. All right.
So I knew from very early on that I didn't want to be a lawyer. Also, you know, just looking at the documents when I was younger that lawyers have to draft, peel through and parse out, like, I know my mind wouldn't be well utilized in that area.
Okay. Very good. Were you a troubled kid? Were you a straight A student? Were you a rebel? Like, where were you kind of in the mix there when you were young? And in high school, I'm talking high school.
High school. So by the time I got to high school, I was pretty somewhat well sorted. I like getting into trouble a little bit, but nothing crazy. But when I was younger, it was I went through phases. I had times in my life where I had really, really good grades, and then times in my life I actually got the worst grades of my life in middle school.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, and I just wouldn't do my homework. I think it really came down to not seeing the value in it. I'm very motivated once I kind of see why I'm doing something, the reason behind it. But until then, it's you know, as a middle schooler especially, you weren't gonna get my homework out of me if I didn't see it. So, but by the time I got to high school, I saw, okay, I need to do well here, because I need to get into a good college to give myself the options that I need. And, you know, honestly, okay, as basic as that, it allowed me to kind of like hone in and
okay. Do well. All right. And when you went to Georgia, did you loosen up? Did you party a little bit there? Because you were part of a fraternity, I know. So there had to be some partying in there. Come on, Brock.
Definitely. I love to have a good time. But I've actually found that just the less helicoptering people are around me, the less micromanaging I have, the more I do better. So I got the best grades of my life I ever got in college. Not that
really?
Great. All right. Yeah, not that grades are the end all be all, but it was one of those things where the more autonomy I had, the more I could do things my own style.
This is one of the reasons you're a great entrepreneur. So you never would have been a good employee.
That's the thing. Like, I'm passable, maybe pretty good at best, but like, it doesn't really utilize what my brain I think is for.
All right, yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, and did you go to the football games? I'm just curious. Georgia, you went to Georgia, so I mean, did you go to?
Went to the games. I'm not a huge football fan, I do just love the spirit. I mean, go dogs. We won the national championship a couple weeks ago. So, I mean,
yes, that's why I brought it up. Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. And okay. So, and how about now? Social life, married, partners, kids, what girlfriends, boyfriends? What's your story? We give us something.
Single.
Oh man. Successful entrepreneur in a downtown, nice place with a great view. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, whatever your preference is, Barack, I'm not sure, but there you go. Hit up Barack on LinkedIn. Barack Zitron, he'll take your LinkedIn invite. By the way, I noticed you haven't posted on LinkedIn lately. That's because you're busy running a company, huh? That's why you're not all over it.
Yeah. I'm just not I don't know. Those things fall by the wayside for me. I should be more on top of it.
That's all right. Now, I mean, you know, you don't have to be right now. You're busy anyway, right? You're busy. So, okay. So you're living downtown now. You're in charge of your CEO at Model Outdoor. You're also are you still captain of design? Are you still the lead designer for products?
Yep. Head of design. Much more experience, probably like three times as experienced at that role as when we last talked. So CEO, head of design.
Okay, very good. You still got your co-founders, your buddies involved? I think there were two or three. Walk me through that. Yeah, the co-founders.
Yeah, so two co-founders, Justin Gould, who you talked to last time, and Zach Leitz, who's our COO. Awesome, sharp individual.
And what's Justin doing? Sales, biz dev, relationships? Or I can't remember.
So he's he's one of the oddest people to place. But we've kind of landed on CRO, chief revenue officer, but really chief relationship officer, because he's an incredible communicator, people person.
Instantly likable. Like he's one of those guys that can walk into the bar and like everybody likes him, right?
Yeah, it's funny because as a there's a funny story actually with my dad, because my dad is a lawyer, a little bit skeptical. Justin was so nice that my dad didn't believe it. He was like, "All right, what's up?" And it took a couple times before just that nice. So
I believe it. It's, you know, by the way, it's interesting. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here. We'll come back to your co-founders, but I wanted to mention your dad's line of work. So my wife and I finally. And I'm 55, my wife's in her early 50s. We finally sat down with an estate lawyer person and, you know, had all the stuff drawn up and the fancy book, the booklet, the paperwork, all the stuff, right? Like everything down to, you know, who gets Kim's wedding ring to, you know, if you're terminally, if you're terminal, when do you want them to turn off the machines? I mean, just all of it, right? Everything. I found that I didn't think it would be weird, but that's kind of a weird conversation. You're having to talk to a lawyer who, you know, they're not total strangers, but they're not family. And they're asking you questions like, okay, so do you want them to stop giving you food and turn off the machines at the same time? Well, they're asking these weird these tough questions, you know, and you're like, oh, damn, I don't know. Let me think about that for a minute.
Start to wade into the gray areas. That's what lawyers can do. It's like they wade into the gray areas and learn how to draw those lines so that you know what side you stand on.
Yeah. Made me answer them. Yeah, he made me answer them. I'm like, okay, check, you know, check, check, check. And we went down the list and. Yep. Then we got this fancy binder and thing in the safe, and I told all the kids, I'm like, okay, you can kill us off now. Everything's decided. It's here. So, you know, anyway, okay, let's get back to the, all right. So all three of you are still involved. You're still active in the company every day, 100% all in.
Exactly. Yep.
All in. All right. How big is the company now? Can you share revenue or employee count? Give us some general sense of how big you guys are now.
Yeah, so we grew a lot last year, basically 3x over the year. We're really proud of it. It was a big year, and we're really capitalizing on that for this year to grow into the future. Our team is mostly contractors at this point, but I'd say the core team is about 10 to 12 people.
All right. Are you outsourcing? Like, what are you outsourcing? Marketing, finance, HR? What parts are you outsourcing? Yeah.
So marketing, finance, quality control, website design,
All that, yeah, okay.
All the buckets. We like to remain pretty lean. Once we've grown a little bit more, we think we want to start bringing some more stuff in house. But okay. At the moment, it's better to utilize services that already exist, that they have their mm-hmm. processes dialed in. We can learn from those processes, and then mm-hmm. Also see, are these long-term partners, or are these different areas we want to bring in house? Maybe even adopt some of the principles that we've learned from these experts. So.
Yeah, no doubt. By the way, that's a great tip for the listeners when you're first starting out, especially if it's a product company, anything CPG related, I would do the same thing. I'd outsource some functional things as much as possible, because you can turn that dial up and down depending on how the business is going, rather than very hiring easy, a bunch of, very, very handy. And, then eventually, you look at it and you go, wow, we could hire a marketing person for 70 grand a year and a marketing associate for 70 grand a year, and that's going to save us XYZ versus the agency or whatever. Once you can do the math as you get growing. Have you raised any cash? What's the story on the cash front?
Story on the cash front is on. So this past year, we expected to raise a big round, and didn't happen. We got through due diligence with a firm, and they pulled out, which
VC
was
or VC or PE or family office, or what was it?
It was a VC. And that was kind of, we did all the things, we hit all the criteria that said thumbs up, but that was at a time when people were like, oh, the economy. And apparently their main LP pulled out. So didn't end up raising that money. That said, we kind of just filled the gaps where we needed, and we're able to produce a 3x growth year without a true raise. Yeah. So we're really happy about that. Long term, we might be thankful we didn't take on that money and probably still did the 20% that did the 80% to get the results that we needed. And so we are raising right now, but from what I understand, it's a as you go sort of basis is kind of what we're working on. But
what are you working on? What's your round, or how far along on you, and how far along are you, and how much?
So we're about 150 into 500. We're still kind of strategizing about the best way to close everything up. There's a couple ideas out there, but don't think I can talk about those.
Did you have early cash? I can't remember if you raised any cash early or not, or you guys just, it was your own bootstrapped cash that you put in. I can't remember what we talked about.
It was friends and family early on. Actually the first investor we pitched to was a thumbs up, which is, wow, how great.
It's not always that easy. Yeah. That gave you a false sense of what it's going to be like.
It's funny. That was almost some of the easiest money we raised, but also is the most nerve wracking. And now, you do pitches a lot, and you just sort of temper expectations.
But you're still in growth / cash burn phase right now. You're not profitable because you're in a growth phase and you're using that cash for sales and marketing and product design or whatever, I guess, right? Assuming.
Yeah. Last year we actually got pretty close to profitability. We grew 3x top line and
came close to break even.
And we decreased our absolute loss while doing that by about 33% as well. So we're really moving in the right direction. And we also have a new set of products that we're focusing on this year that are higher margin, way more operationally efficient in a variety of ways. And also, we're just being able to we're able to leverage all the relationships that we've been building and skills. And so we think this is the year where we can really get above the profitability mark. We actually aren't even trying to grow too much top line this year, because it's not about us trying to sell investors. It's us, let's get to profitability. And if we're generating profit, or if we're generating cash, we think that's the recipe that's going to lead to a raise.
It will. Yeah. For you guys, it's interesting. Yeah. You're not a tech company, right? So it's not, I guess traditionally it's not just super top line growth and doesn't matter how much cash you can burn. In your case, you're a product company, you're a CPG company. So for investors to want to bite on it, you might need to eventually show a little profitability and some financial wherewithal, you know, to run a good P&L. So I get that. And more importantly, if you are self-sustainable with your own income statement, then you don't have to borrow any money. You guys can just keep growing and do what you want.
Exactly. And I mean, I think we are poised to grow very quickly, but it's about getting that structure underneath us. And you know, that's, you kind of pointed out one of the most interesting kind of growth, personal, and just business mindset growth that we've had over the past couple of years, which is, you know, as a product of the 2010s, the three of us, we were kind of going into this with a tech growth mentality.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of hit a wall of, well, you guys are making hardware products. Like, what's like, you can't raise the valuation, or you can't do this, or I'm not interested. And that's, you know, that's fine. But basically we had to kind of realign, like, where's our place here? And it's not just about, you know, it's how we view ourselves, but also what are other people going to view us? How's the market going to view us? And ultimately, consumer products are, it's harder to raise money. It's harder to raise money on a high valuation, which means that chasing that growth for later profitability, you know, you're essentially betting on some level on your ability to raise more money to make it That's happen. Right. You get those numbers. And, you know, at some point you have to feel confident, or, you know, we had to decide, you know, that can't be our strategy. We can't be thinking or taking the advice of all these Silicon Valley, X, Y, and Z. You need to hit this much growth. And, because even if we showed projections of we're going to grow 10x and we're going to give you a 10x return on your investment, you know, people wouldn't buy it because it's a hardware business. And that's right. So, you know, I don't want to put any blame on other people. That's one of my big things. Like, you know, if we're having an issue, you know, look to the inside. But these are just things we have to recognize and then change internally the best way to present it. So,
yep. I like what you're doing. I mean, I know that, you know, people your age generally, you know, they've all seen the Facebook movie and all these, you know, they read the tech news about how, oh, I had an idea and we were in business for 1 year and then some VC firm in California gave us $1 billion and now we're all millionaires. I mean, the reality is that is a very, very, very tiny ass percentage of people walking around on planet Earth that happens to. And you're in a product company, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with building a product company on your own over the next 5 or 10 years that ends up being a multi-million dollar or even higher, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that you still own 51% of, and you aren't accountable to anybody because you've never taken on any cash. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, bro. Believe me. In fact, when you're 40, if you haven't had to take on any cash and you have this big product business and you guys don't have to answer to any investors, trust me, you're going to love it if you can do that.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you know, we do think that there's huge growth potential in model, especially right. With the new products that we're creating and in the business that we're setting up. But ultimately, like, trying again and again to get people to believe that, it's like, we'll try, we'll continue to try.
In the meantime, we're running a business over here.
Yeah. In the meantime, we're going to do what's best for us to get the business, all the expenses paid, to get us paid and set up a really exponential foundation. So that's really what we're focused on.
That's great. Let's talk about the products, man. Yeah. And I want to just, you know, for the listeners again, I want to make sure we're directing them to the URL a few times, MODL Outdoors, modeloutdoors.com. Talk to me about the products, you know, that you have now, your staple products, if you will, and whatever you can share about what you're about to release. Go for it.
Yeah. So Model was founded on a multi-tool for water. I kind of said that right at the beginning of this. And the original idea was, we have bottles, bladders, filters, none of them work together. What if there was a one-stop solution for water on any adventure? And we created Model, our version of a flexible multi-tool for water. But in creating this thing, basically I was asking myself the question of what does a flexible multi-tool look like? I mean, this is some permutation of a flexible multi-tool, but what would a flexible multi-tool be like? It wouldn't have a knife in it. It wouldn't have these screwdrivers like you think of a Leatherman. What would it be? And for a long time, we looked at this as a loop on a bottle, and we designed this loop so that's detachable and you can strap this straight to a bag, straight to a bike, both ends. And that's why we designed these handles. But we realized that right under our noses, we were actually developing the basis of the flexible multi-tool. And so with the addition of this stud right here that you can see, we were actually able to turn these loops into flexible carabiners, simple gear ties. What's really cool about them is, first of all, they're simple, which simple is really hard in design to do well. And what's really cool about this is we really view this as the basic Lego block of a future ecosystem. And the idea is that, first of all, these are modular, so you can connect them end to end, make it as long as you want. You can kind of see right here, we have just like a yin yang stud, kind of like a gibbet in a crock, for instance. But these things are going to be functional in addition to just stylish. So you have a product here, which is based on true functionality, but it's also got a fun aspect to it. It has a bit of a personality, or you can imbue your personality with it. And,
And by doing that, by like colors, or can you add stuff to it? Can you add like funky little buttons to it or whatever? What can you put on it to make it yours?
Yeah. So, I mean, on a function point of view, you can have hooks, you can have different links like this. You can have magnets, we've got some cool designs, but basically there's going to be a lot of functionality that can plug into this system that people are going to be able to customize and create their own ideal tool. But in the future, we're also going to do some really cool things where we're, I can't get into too many details, but basically open this up so that people can design their own things and buy and sell them to each other.
Oh, now there you go. Now you got my attention as an investor even. All right. Oh, wow. All right. Almost like a white label type of deal where you're white labeling and people can do whatever they want. Okay. Interesting. Yeah,
so,
Interesting.
We create the foundation, we create the canvas, and then where people can build on top of it, like Legos, but functional.
I like that idea. Okay. Wow. All right. So I can buy them in bulk. Yeah. I can go online and say, hey, I want 1,000 of them. By the way, make 500 pink and make 500 purple and put these buttons on them and put Riderflex for our recruiting firm. Put Riderflex button in there, whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so just to illustrate how exciting these studs could get is, for a long time I said I thought this was a loop on a bottle. We realized that this bottle is actually a stud on this loop. So it's like, what items about this size or smaller could be integrated into the system? Lanterns, bottles, you name it. There's a lot.
All kinds of stuff. By the way, when I'm hiking or I'm on my ATV in the mountains, I'm always trying to like attach stuff to myself.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And it's interesting. So I have a utility belt, right? That I take camping with me, and on my utility belt, I usually have like my knife or a compass or whatever. And I'm always trying to figure out how I can hook extra stuff on it. Yeah. Whether it's a little flashlight or whether it's a GPS, I have like an emergency beacon GPS thing or whatever. All right. I like that. Now, you call it the multi-tool. Is that what it's called? Multi-tool?
It's called the Infinity Tool. And we kind of do that because we really want people to use their imagination with it. It also makes a little infinity right here, which is fun.
You do sell some studs already. You got some studs on the website, I see, but they're not personalized yet.
Right. So we're at the very beginning stages of this. But you can see what I mean by building an exponential foundation here.
Yeah, no doubt.
We're really working on building truly essential items that, you can think about this on a basic level as a reusable zip tie. We use it a lot for what you would bind stuff together with duct tape. Somebody who was doing carpentry needed to glue two pieces of wood together. And because this is flexible enough, they were just able to wrap this up, clamp everything together.
Okay.
It's really open to your imagination.
Okay. So right now you're selling the bottle that you have there.
Yep.
And you're selling the infinity tool.
Yep.
And you're selling the studs.
Yep.
And anything else currently?
That is everything currently. And we do drops. Well, another cool thing that this product allows us to do is much smaller runs of items. It's just very operationally efficient, so we can do drops of special colors and
I like it.
Studs.
It's gonna be
a fun experience to be a part of this journey as this tool grows.
Can you brand the bottle if you want to as well, or no? Are you gonna allow people?
Yeah. Well, because the loops are on the bottle, you could actually use the same studs that are useful on this on here, or just to brand it and make it look cool.
It's
a whole ecosystem. That's the idea. Like, we're right at the beginning, but this is like Legos, but functional. Okay.
Where are you having the product made? I think I asked you that last time, but I can't remember who's manufacturing it for you and where.
Yeah. So we manufacture in Shenzhen in China, but we are definitely looking into other places. One of our big goals for this year is to set up a supplier outside of China
at least a backup supplier. Did you have any
just to give some flexibility, because we just don't know.
You just don't know. Did you have any supply issues, by the way, when COVID came? Were they holding your product on the water or anything?
I don't know if it was beginner's luck, if it was the brilliance of our COO Zach or what, but we kind of just glided through all of like true issues that would have been created by COVID. It didn't really affect us on a supply chain front. May have affected us marginally on a demand front.
Okay. Where can you buy the product besides online, besides your own website? Where can you purchase it?
Yeah. So the main outlet is our website. There are a couple of online retailers. There's a retailer called Lou Outdoors up in Silverthorne that we are piloting with. But really this will be the year where we're going to be rolling out Amazon in a couple months. And then,
So you are going to Amazon. Okay.
Going to Amazon. Yep.
And what about, places like Bass Pro Shop, Shields, some of these big camping outdoor store, are you going to any retailers?
Yeah. So that's also on the list for this year. This product, because we're focused on it, it's a much more simple retail sell for a modular bottle. It's like, what is this thing? There's a lot of competition and you got to have mods and a whole graphic. These are small. They could be at the checkout counter. They could have their own place. So
I got to admit, when I was in Shields up in Johnstown, the big, big giant Shields that's up here in Colorado, I was over by that stuff and I was looking for your product. I was like, I wonder if they're in here.
Well, so they're a target. They're a target amongst some others.
Okay. Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they got everything. They got everything.
They've got Ferris wheels in their store.
I would think they would be a target for you. Did you stick with direct consumer from your own website at first, just because of margin or because of simplicity or entry into the marketplace or all of the above?
So it was a lot of the above. I think we can get into this. We can get out into this later, but direct consumer, I think, is not as good as it was cracked up to be, just in general. And I think it's a part of the mix, but we can talk about that more. Really, what it came down to is, for us, if you're building something where you don't exactly know what the application is going to be. I mean, there's some things where it's like, this is a bike lock for this specific person. Awesome. That's great in a lot of ways. You know who your market is. You know you can talk to them.
Yeah.
When you create open-ended products, you need to have a level of learning from your customers.
Okay.
And And so that is
good
one
point.
Big thing that direct to consumer would give us over Amazon or retail.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You've learned a shit ton in the last 15, 16 months.
Oh man. I mean, so much. And then, you know, it's not just as a new product, it wasn't proven. Also, it's what do you like about it? What do you dislike about it? You don't have that ability to talk to your customers, your real customers, if you're just selling through retail, if you're just selling through Amazon. Not to mention, I mean, there were plenty of people who warned us about going on Amazon. And, you know, for one reason or another, we also thought the added complexity just wasn't worth it for us at that point in time. And then retail is a game where you've got to get in the door and then you've got to sell through, both of which are not exactly easy. And to be honest, I think we were still, I don't think Model was ready for retail.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, seriously, like if Shields puts you on the shelf and you don't execute, I mean, they'll pull you out of there in a heartbeat and make you come get the product.
And make you pay to have time to pick up your product. Like,
yeah, seriously.
No, I mean, there's so many stipulations. I mean, Amazon itself is a business model in itself. Retail is a business model in itself. Direct consumer, yeah. I think it was a good fit for us because we got to learn a lot from our product, got to interface with
like
our
that.
Customers, and got to control the experience, and just it gave us a learning ground. And now, now we're making our foray into those other channels.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think that was a good strategy. You know, I will tell you as a consumer, you know, now if I see something, like let's say I'm on YouTube. So here's a habit I have, right? I'm on the treadmill in the morning and I'm a huge, like we talked about, I'm a huge Jeep/trail hiking Colorado mountain guy, right? So I got a bunch of YouTubers that I follow that are camping guys and stuff, right? Like I follow all these channels. So when I'm on my treadmill in the morning, I'm always watching them. And if I see something cool, if I see they have a product that I want or whatever, I'll make a note of it, you know, while I'm on the treadmill. And then I'll try to find it on Amazon. And if I cannot find it on Amazon, I'm like, oh, all right.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you know, now I got to go to another website and create a thing. And I don't want to do that, you know. but I understand. I think you had a good strategy to learn, you know, early on. So,
yeah, it's definitely, I mean, Amazon is something you want to do very, very deliberately, but if you're not on there, you are missing out on sales. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
We just honestly, we had a lot that we were focused on, and we just the complexity of Amazon.
Yeah.
We didn't
want
to get dragged into that. But now with a more simple product that we're going to be focusing on, it just makes sense. And we think it's going to really boost our sales. And
are you going to raise your retails to make up for the 15% loss in margin when you go to Amazon? You're going to,
probably not. I think that's another good thing about this. We've got good margin. And it's yet to be truly optimized, but it's still at Keystone as it is.
Can you get better margins from your Chinese supplier when you start ordering in more bulk? I'm sure you can.
Yes. Marginally, at least for, you know, the quantities we're going to be ordering in the near future. I haven't priced out what, you know.
Yeah. Are you shipping? Who's doing distribution for you? You guys just doing it yourself in a little warehouse somewhere in Denver? Or?
So right now we work with a 3PL called ShipBob, and they've been really good for automating our fulfillment. That said, this year we are looking to start testing out different either partners or potentially even bringing fulfillment in-house, specifically, once again, around this, because it's so simple, we don't need a huge system of, you know, first of all, I mean, this inventory takes up so much more space, not to mention it's more complex. The orders are more complex. You know, these are lengths and colors.
Gotcha.
And so we might actually do a thing where we've got a dual setup where these are shipped out of one facility that is tailor-made for these things. And then,
can you talk about any other products that you're the designer? Can you talk about anything else you got going? Anything else in the mix here that's coming, or give us a little hint on anything?
What I'm going to say is that the Infinity tool is going to get infinitely more useful this year. And we're going to be tiptoeing into having a community that can create for this thing.
Okay. But what, your website says tools for adventure. When I read tools for adventure, I'm like, okay, well, I'm ready. Oh, show me what tools you have. Cause I go on adventures all the time.
Yep.
Is there any other adventure tools? Any other, like, you know, things I'm going to want to have for my, solo journeys to the mountains?
Not
this year.
Not that aren't under wraps.
Not that are. Okay. All right. I have some things I want you to make for me though. When you do decide to design some things.
Okay.
I'm always looking for interesting things that will help me in the mountain. Cause I do a lot of adventure type stuff solo. Right. So I'm always looking for things to make it more enjoyable and easier to go. Can you do this? Can you make your, can you give me some sort of heating element to drop into your bottle so that when the shower goes over my head, it's not cold as hell and I'm freezing myself when I'm up in there. Cause even in the summertime, when you're at 9,000 feet, the water gets cold at night.
Yeah. Very possible. It's an idea in the works. Heating is very energy intensive. So it probably doesn't make sense to be battery powered is pretty much what we've come down to at this point.
You've talked about it. I'm not the first one to bring this up, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, how cool would this thing be if you could press a button and it would heat your water?
Love it.
That would be sweet. And also it's like not only just shower, but also, you know, if you're camping, if you've ever slept with a hot Nalgene before, this thing is 10 times better because it's soft. If it like were to automatically heat itself every you know, 30 minutes or whatever, that would be Barack.
Barack, do it. Make it. Design it, Barack. Come on. I need that.
I will do my best. But
yeah, that would be, I would buy one right away. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Are you going to get into any other kind of camping stuff? Any other type of gear at all? Like, I don't know, tents or backpacks or any, I mean, I know that's a heavily, very competitive market, but are you going to get into anything else like that at all?
I wouldn't close the door on it down the line. Once again, like the idea is that we're creating Legos for adventure. That's really the core theme here. So whether or not in the future, you know, this plugs into a tent and, you know, makes that worthwhile, or all of our gear is going to work together. And we're really going to focus on our niche of flexible products and ecosystem of flexible tools. That's kind of our guiding light. And yeah.
Okay. You know what I wish I had? This is what I really wish I had. This is not probably not your area, but you're an outdoor adventure guy, so you can probably relate. You know, so many of the forest roads, they're getting more and more closed off to where they're either the rangers are either locking them or whatever. And you can't drive your Jeep down as many as you used to be able to. So you got to park and sometimes you got to walk or whatever. And man, you know, I really want to go camping in some of those areas, but lugging my gear 3 miles in at the age of 55 is not something I relish, right? Like, I'm like, okay. And I'm always thinking, man, I would go camping. Like, I'll come across a cool area and I'll be like, man, I would love to go camping back in there, but I can't get my Jeep back in there. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had some sort of, I don't know if it's a sled or if it's like a something you pull with tires or so. I wish I had something that I could get my gear 2 or 3 miles in that was either battery powered or something to help me get it there. If I had that, I would go camping way back in cooler places all the time. Mm-hmm. Because I take more with me than just a backpack, right? I'm old. I got to have more stuff. I got to have more stuff. I can't just do a backpack. So I'm always like, man, how do I get all my stuff back there? You know, I can't ride. And then sometimes you can't take your four wheeler, your ATV, cause you can't, they won't let you, whatever. There's rules against that. And I'm always like, man, if I could get my stuff back there, I'd go back there. But anyway,
I'm imagining like a self-balancing, shopping cart almost, like two wheels on the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen those Boston Dynamics robots, right?
Yes, something like that.
With the wheels on its feet. it's crazy what those things are capable of. Like, yeah. Imagine just having like a huge bin you could just pile stuff into, and it would just roll down the trail with you.
That would be awesome. I would go way back in there. Yes, those are the kind of thoughts I've had as I've gone by these places. But anyway, went down a rabbit hole. But I'm always looking for stuff like that because they're shutting off more and more roads. You know, they don't let you just wheel around anywhere anymore. It's getting harder to find places. And when I do go up to the mountains now, I don't want to see people. Now I see people all the time. I'm like, I don't know. I didn't come up here to be like, I don't want to be on the trail with like 10 other people. No.
Yeah. Anyway. So it's actually interesting because I've lived in Colorado for 3 years now, and you know, I've done a fair amount of just driving around. I just enjoy driving.
Yeah.
And you know, I recently went out to California and I was also driving around there. The number of forest roads that were accessible to me. I don't know if I was oblivious to them here, but in Northern California, they were all over the place in the Sierra Nevadas.
How about that?
Yeah, up near, like between Tahoe and Sacramento. Oh my God, some of the most beautiful forests and little like nowhere towns. I'm talking like three buildings in the like way down a dirt road.
Those are my kind of places. Those are my kind of places. Like I gotta go.
Town. Yeah, like I think it's called like look at Forest Hill in Northern California or something.
Okay.
But it just kind of like I'd never noticed that many before. And I don't know if now I need to just look better here in Colorado, but especially coming from Georgia, it does feel kind of like clamped down, and you know, it's either private property or it's a normal road. But when I was out there, I was shocked by the number of explorable areas and just dirt roads you could go down and get lost on. So
interesting. That's good to know. Yeah. I gotta do that more. All right, my friend. So it's going to be a busy year for you guys as you venture down this road. I got to get,
send you some Infinity tools.
I need some that are like branded, I want to play with that. Yeah. I mean, damn, if I could get a bunch of those Infinity tools branded RiderFlex in some way and I could send those out to my clients, we would do that. I mean, that'd be cool. Cause if they get that versus a coffee cup, I mean, they're going to be like, wow, this is cool. Like, this is different,
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a cool bracelet. It shows your brand. It's really high quality materials. It's platinum silicone and stainless steel, like casted stainless steel. And we can put we can etch logos straight into the stainless steel. So
very cool. I like it.
Great for corporate gifting as well.
I think that's a wonderful idea. ModelOutdoors.com, Brock. Thank you very much for the update. I'm super happy for you, man. You got 3 extra revenue. You're doing $1 million in revenue. How's it feel to be? You got $1 million company, man. That feels good, doesn't it?
It's crazy. And I think it sounds cooler than it is when it's day to day. It definitely sounds good. We're still a hardware products company. We're working with our cash flow and I mean, it's exciting for sure. And I can tell really we've come so far as a business personally.
I'm learning a ton.
To see what we can do this year.
You're learning a ton. By the way, it is interesting, right? You're celebrating. How long did you celebrate the million? Like, you didn't celebrate it very long, right? I know you didn't, because Scott and I, my co-founder, we got about 30 people involved now. We did a little over 2.5 million in revenue. That was like a 70% increase over the year before.
Awesome.
Here's the thing, right? You probably did the same thing in your mind. I know, right? Like, I got it. I'm like, several of the board members are like, wow, great job. Great numbers. And I'm like, yeah, but now it's January 2023, and immediately I got to start beating those numbers. And now I got the pressure of beating that number.
Yeah, you're constantly raising the bar for yourself, which I think is healthy and challenging and hard, like it should be. Like,
yeah,
you don't want it easy right now. Honestly.
That's right. That's right. Brock, thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for updating everybody.
Yeah, for sure. If anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. And we'll be in touch, Steve.